Hey friend, I'm Tanisha Sela, and you're listening to the Life of an Empath podcast. I'm an empath, Akashic Records reader, and intuitive guide. I'm exactly what you would expect a modern day mystic to be. I meditate, I'm a crystal lover, sporadic yogi, and I believe in love and universal goodness. I help high-level creatives, empaths, and teams achieve emotional clarity and allow them to utilize intuition as business strategy. On this podcast, I share stories about my personal spiritual journey, the lessons that I'm learning through my clients, and life as a wife and mom of two toddlers. Welcome to my life. Let's get started. Today's episode is a special treat for those interested in the deepest aspects of my story. A story that I never intended to put out on the interwebs, but I find it fitting this Mother's Day. Today, I'm sharing with you the birth story of my daughter and firstborn. So if you are a new mom, an expecting mom, a well-seasoned mom, or desire motherhood as a part of your journey, keep listening. I dedicate today's episode to you. Motherhood was something I always desired. It just came a bit later than I expected. I found out I was expecting Easter weekend of the year I would turn 36 years old. And as you can imagine, it came with all of the feelings. I was nervous, excited, hopeful, everything you can imagine you would feel when you discover life is growing inside of you. I knew it would be an interesting journey because just a couple of weeks ahead of Easter, my husband left to travel extensively for work. Me and our little baby would be alone for a bit, but being the independent ball of air I always have been, I knew I would be okay alone. Those were my thoughts, and they guided me, or at least I hoped they would. I made the initial mandatory doctor's appointment to get the official confirmation, and I just went on with life. In the meantime, I had the same thoughts every woman who gets pregnant has. Gaining weight. You heard me. I was worried about getting fat. Isn't that always the first line of fear for a new mommy? Well, it was for me. So I began trips to the gym, which was in addition to the active work environment I was in. As my 8-week doc appointment rolled around, I noticed I wasn't gaining much weight and started to relax. Luckily for me, I maintained an average weight gain throughout my pregnancy, but it was at my 8-week appointment that I did have to grapple with a different cause for concern, my age. Being 35 and expecting came with its own medical diagnosis, a geriatric pregnancy. Which seems a bit outdated considering women in this modern age are not only getting married later, but having children later as well, whether they are partnered or not. I thought it was very insensitive to be labeled geriatric, and it made it seem as if I was 75 years old and desperate to be called mommy just once before I die. But there is also something else I learned at that visit. I was automatically high risk because of my age, and that meant I would need to see a high risk specialist often, along with my regular OB. If finding out I was deemed a geriatric pregnancy was insensitive, well, the high risk part was upsetting. According to my doctor, the water birth that I had hoped for was probably out of the question. Seeing as how this was my first real pregnancy visit beyond the pregnancy confirmation, it seemed as though I was out of options before I had even had a chance to explore them. I had always dreamed of an at-home water birth, and I had been warned about getting an epidural and the complications that could potentially arise later. However, my pregnancy progressed, and despite my regular trips to my OB and the frequent trips to the University of Maryland Hospital to see my high-risk doc, my pregnancy was turning out to be pretty normal and uneventful through my second trimester. It's easy for me to say that now in hindsight, but at the time, it felt like I was constantly holding my breath, just waiting to find out some unfortunate news. It was sad. I felt like I had to settle all the emotions I was having about my experience myself. The doctor's appointment stressed me completely out, but there was no reassurance from any of the people I would consider my medical team. No one seemed to care. I had to come to my own positive beliefs about the high-risk process. I finally decided that it was good because at least I got to see the baby more often on the ultrasound than I would with my regular OB visits. They were the 3D and 4D version at no extra cost out of pocket, but that was the only positive of the experience. Honestly, I can't even tell you what my high-risk doc's name was. I saw only the ultrasound tech. The tech would take the doc the scans, and if they were normal, I was good to go. So I decided never meeting the high-risk doc meant a healthy baby. I want to pause right here and say something that I wish someone had told me. Enjoy the process of growing life. Where there is joy, seize it. If I had known that then, I would have insisted on more in every aspect of the process. But most of all, I would have asserted myself in a way that commanded more respect for all that I was experiencing as a mother-to-be. It was during this time that I had my one and only vision about my birth. I saw myself on my hands and knees during the labor. I didn't know what that would mean, but like all visions, I take note and try to be open for what's to come. Like all good stories, the protagonist has to encounter an unexpected roadblock, and mine is no different. At 31 weeks pregnant, I found myself out of work. Let me explain. I was working in property management and my property sold, which is technically great news. But this meant there was nothing left for me to sell, which meant no more work to do. Now, if you think this sent me into a complete tailspin, it didn't. I wasn't planning to return to work after having the baby anyway. If anything, the 3 weeks after I lost my job were the happiest of my entire pregnancy. I know it sounds ironic, but I could finally find gratitude in what was happening to me. I got more time to consider my being and all that I wanted for my child's first year since I wasn't going to have the birth of my dreams. Friend, you still with me? This is when things get more interesting, if you can believe it. Although I had seen my hubby since finding out I was pregnant, he was away again and I wasn't sure he would return before the birth. As fate would have it, my unexpected job loss came just days before a planned visit to my family back in my hometown. It was supposed to be the last visit before my delivery, but while there, I decided to move there before the baby was born so I wouldn't be alone in case my hubby couldn't make it back. It may sound crazy, but this changed everything. While back in my hometown, I happened to find a new home for us and decided to acquire the house so that I could remove one major item from the moving to-do list. Once back in Maryland, I would start packing to return to the South, and that's when the synchronicities would start flooding in. First, I realized my husband had left all of his things very orderly, almost as if he knew he wouldn't return. The only high-risk doctor where I was moving that would take me at 31 weeks was an African-American doctor, so I thought this would give me a more connected experience. And honestly, the thing is, it did and it didn't. The new doctor was a new experience, and it came with all of those starter emotions again. Instead of helping me to understand their approach to labor and delivery, I just felt like I was part of the machine that was their day-to-day workflow. I might as well have had been a patient with a number and my personal information didn't matter. Even though I had hand-delivered my medical records, they treated me as if I hadn't received medical care in 31 weeks. Furthermore, their equipment was less sophisticated, and still no one was looking after my emotional state beyond the very cold and sterile questions that were asked to gauge if I was depressed. Let me be direct here. Anyone with a third grade education could put together that that's what the line of questioning was for. I would hate to have been a mother that was being abused during pregnancy or was significantly depressed because I certainly wouldn't have confessed it to them. Why? Because those generic questions weren't very open-ended, and it makes you feel like if you are depressed, some child advocate will magically show up to take your baby as soon as you deliver. Such practices are not only isolating, but quite frankly indicative of the lack of deep empathy and gentle, thoughtful care that should be common practice. This, to me, is a fundamental element of bedside manner, and it was severely lacking. Needless to say, this was about the time I thought it would be beneficial to get a doula, which in retrospect, I should have done while I was in Maryland and stayed there. Since I was in a relatively small town down south, there weren't any African-American doulas that I could hire. And if I was going to hire a doula, that would have been my preference. The next couple of weeks went by and I kept busy unpacking and getting everything ready for both my husband and the baby in the house. My husband finally returned and we moved into our new place together about a week or so before things took a turn in the pregnancy. A little side note, I actually stayed with my mom the first 3 weeks, even though I had secured our own house. The night I said I would finally move in alone was the day he showed up. I know, the twists and turns don't ever seem to stop. About 34 weeks in, my blood pressure started to spike. From there, I would need weekly non-stress tests, which is about the most stressful thing you could go through. During a non-stress test, the baby's heart rate is monitored to see how it responds to the baby's movements. It is all machines, all diagnosis, no mystique, magic, or miracle of what a woman's body is bringing forth, nor the delicate emotional fabric she may be bundled in. As you can imagine, these encounters and episodes led up to a stressful final weeks of the pregnancy. Yet, somewhere in between the labels, incessant appointments, and eye-opening detachment of medical professionals, I found the strength I needed to power me through to the end. By week 34, my blood pressure was still up and preeclampsia ensued. I was so scared during my entire pregnancy that I didn't buy any baby items until 35 weeks in. I went to the nearest Babies R Us and proceeded to purchase everything that she needed in less than 2 hours. To be frank, I did that because by that point I was worried she would come earlier than anticipated and I wouldn't have anything prepared for her. On the morning of my 36-week checkup, I packed a bag because I knew that I would be admitted. And I was. Over the next 2 days, the doctors tried to get my blood pressure down, but my little one was running out of amniotic fluid, so they needed to take her. If you recall, I mentioned earlier that I had one vision about my pregnancy before the move. In this vision, I saw myself delivering on my hands and knees, and I would somehow get there during the birth. Equipped with this information, I adamantly refused when they presented me with an authorization form for a C-section, since that will leave me flat on my back. I soon found myself induced and experiencing intense synthetic contractions that were much harder than I anticipated, and I was forced to get an epidural to endure it. However, Issa, my husband, was with me, so I had my support. His presence was critical because I believe that he felt the disconnection in the process as much as I did. It was under his watchful eye and his very direct questions that helped us get some sense of clarity in the delivery. I believe many of us will need that to not be discarded in the disparity of Black maternal care. As the saga continued, I refused the C-section and the baby's heart rate dropped. It was then that I got on my hands and knees to bring her heart rate back up and I knew she would be okay. That was literally the moment I leaned into the promise of a safe and healthy baby and I took her fate into my own hands. As soon as I did, she started coming and the doctor all but missed the moment. For me, it felt like spiritual and physical confirmation that he wasn't needed. I pushed twice and there was my baby girl. Tiny but mighty and not in need of any extra support. But there was a single moment, friend, post-delivery, where I felt I was in some form of shock of it all. It was at that moment that I did feel thankful for my doctor and thankful for his Blackness. He looked directly at me while the nurses were fussing over cleaning the baby and said, "Sister, are you okay?" It was at the 11th hour that I finally felt seen in the process. I'm not sure what happened, but he was there, and he didn't miss that I was in distress, and his words called out to me. For that, I am grateful. That could have very well been my Serena moment, and who knows what could have happened without his observation, and also that of my husband right by my side. After delivery, the white pediatrician said automatically, "She should be fine. African American girls are the strongest." This statement alone took me back and made me feel like that may have been how they regarded the slaves of yesteryear. whether it was true or not statistics-wise, that is not the mindset needed for someone who has just given birth and is indicative of why and how so many Black mothers suffer from a disproportionate number of pre- and postpartum issues and deaths. To make matters more uncomfortable, I greatly disliked how the white nurses were giving me rules and care instructions for the baby as if we didn't care for their children with no instructions for so many generations. The inherent bias in my care was further indicative in the disconnection that I had felt all along. When it was time to feed the baby, the nurse was kind of rough with my breasts in order to show me the latch techniques. The disrespect went beyond this, and it was full of cultural insensitivity. Issa and I had decided that we were going to wait to name the baby as a part of his cultural practice. But this became another issue, and the staff continued to try and force a name out of us and seemed to not accept or respect our request. It was all simply too much, and I wanted and needed to be at home with my new husband and new baby in the safety of our space. Despite being underweight, we were discharged after 2 days. In retrospect, the entire process left me emotionally and spiritually drained. There was no space made for Native practices. There was no honor. There was no understanding of customs or traditions. It was mechanical and lacked the very vitality that new life vibrates with. The trauma impacted the way I began with my daughter, and that's part of the problem with a system that doesn't prioritize the very magic of birth and the journey that it takes to get there. By the end, I felt disconnected from her, I was checking out, I was mad at me, and consequently mad at her. But when I saw her, I couldn't believe how strong she had been. All she had to fight to be here, with us, and healthy. This is the legacy of my firstborn. Her very name means the light, and that is what she has always been and always will be. On this Mother's Day, my thought for us is that we be informed, not just by modern medicine or checked out medical practitioners, but by spirit, the very pulse of the universe that has given us the gift of life. I pray that my story serves as a roadmap for what can be done better, a truthful telling of the pain that can cover the very dynamic and experience of ushering in life. May we not be afraid, but empowered to seek spirit and surrender to the light. Thank you so much for spending time with me today. I'm so grateful that you were drawn to my corner of this thing we call life. If you want to connect more, I'm on Instagram at @lifeofanempath_, or visit my website at lifeofanempath.com. No time like the present for you to connect with spirit about your current circumstances and your secret ambitions. I would be so honored to be your guide. If you enjoyed our time together today, would you send this to someone in your circle that needs a spiritual pick-me-up or has questions about their own spiritual gifts? Thanks, friend. Talk soon. Until next time.